The Norwegian pianist Leif Ove Andsnes has been nominated for multiple Grammy Awards, was called the most accomplished pianist of the new generation by the New York Times. Tomorrow through next Saturday, he'll be performing at Carnegie Hall alongside other celebrated chamber musicians as part of the Riser Festival tour. These concerts also coincide with the release of his latest recording of Rachmaninoff's Concertos Numbers 3 and 4, and I'm very pleased that it brings Mr. Andsnes to our show today. Hello.
Hello.
The Times does really love you. In today's paper, Anthony Tomasini called you splendid.
Well, that's very nice of him.
Your residency at Carnegie Hall is a way of celebrating the Riser Chamber Music Festival, which takes place during the summer in Norway.
That's right. It takes place around Midsummer Night for only 6 days, actually. But we're playing day and night. There's not much sleep to get at that.
That's because you have 24-hour light?
Almost. About 20 hours. Uh-huh. So we program concerts in the mornings, in the nights, sometimes at midnight, often shorter concerts and very different concerts, I think, from what one normally hears, with very different groupings. You know, you can, in one program, you can have everything from a duo to a piece for orchestra. And that's very exciting for the audience.
Well, that must be very complicated to put together.
It is, and it's quite some work year round, but it has been so rewarding. It's been the one place where I'm always coming back to when I think what I've learned through the years, how much music I've had to get to learn through the festival and get to study, how many musicians I've met there, how many friends I've made. It's been just the most wonderful place.
Because musicians usually focus on a few pieces at any given time. Otherwise, it could get rather complicated, can't it? It would be like acting in 12 different plays all at the same time.
Yes, well, we wanted to avoid that. You know, there are lots of festivals that seem to repeat always the same popular pieces. But, for example, when we did 3 years of Beethoven between 96 and 98, I think we did about 80 of his pieces. So not only the piece is famous, but actually also the sort of French things. And the audience loved that, to actually, you know, dig into his whole accomplishment.
Well, you're not going to be duplicating anything like that at Carnegie Hall, are you?
No, we only have space for four programs here, but I think they are very diverse and very typical Riser-style programming. So we have everything from a couple of contemporary Scandinavian composers to Stravinsky's Rite of Spring in version for two pianos, which is quite a stunt that I'm doing together with Marc-André Amelin, and we have our orchestra playing Bartok and Onegger and things.
Is this the first time the festival's gone on tour? Can we call it the festival being going on tour?
Yes, it's a strange thing, isn't it? Because we can't bring the town on tour, and the town of Riser is very
different than New York.
It's
a fishing
village.
Very
different, and it's a very small town. And I think festivals often make a lot of sense in small towns because you can really color the whole place. It has 7,000 inhabitants. It has one hotel. It's quite a problem to find housing for people. So we have a lot of music lovers coming there in the summer.
Why make it so difficult for yourself? Couldn't you do this in Copenhagen, or if not that, some other place that at least has three hotels?
I guess so, but we just love the place. It's very special. It has a wooden Baroque church, which we absolutely love, and the intimacy of the place and the intimacy of the locations where we play is very special. And I think that's very crucial, because if you think of the music we are playing, it's not most of it written for to be performed in a hall of 2,000 people. It's written for the living room. You know, if you play Mozart violin sonatas, it's supposed to be played for a few friends, house music. And in Riser, we get so close to that. What we don't have to bring on the tour, which I'm happy about, is are all the seagulls from Riser, because they destroy some of our concerts. That's nice going to New York, actually.
Well, is this kind of a farewell celebration?
For me, it is, because I'm stepping down as artistic director of the festival after 17 years.
How old were you when you started? You're very young as
I started when I was 22.
Wow.
And I fell in love with the place. It had already existed for 2 years, the festival. And I was playing there the two first years. And I just felt there's something magical here. And then I discovered the joy of musicians taking charge of of festivals and creating their own programs. I think it's a very, very different experience. I think most musicians, if they have a chance, should also be on the organizer side.
Because you're usually just hired guns, unless you're the star and then you're asked what you want to play. But musicians are brought in to play with an orchestra. We want to do a certain concerto, and do you want to play that?
Yes, I can decide the repertoire myself when I'm traveling around, but I have no control over which what surrounds the piece, what kind of environment I'm playing in, and very often one finds oneself in a situation which is designed to make classical music sort of massage the soul a little bit and make one feel better. And I think music is much more important than that. It should be thought provoking. It should really be engaging. And to create your own festival, one can do all these things, these interesting things that one misses the rest of the year.
You mentioned that you are playing Scandinavian composers. And when I think of Scandinavian composers, I think of Sweden, Norway, Finland, not Denmark.
Yeah.
Well, is there a big classical musical scene in Denmark that I'm unaware of?
I think there is. I happen to love a contemporary composer called Bent Sørensen that we are doing a piece of on Thursday's concert. And there's Carl Nielsen, the big symphonic
Carl Nielsen, can't forget him.
Yes, but I think at the moment there is maybe even more exciting things happening in Norway. I'm not sure exactly why. I think we had some very wonderful musicians coming to the country in the 70s, some Russian musicians, some Czech. My teacher was Czech. He came in 71. They influenced the Norwegian musical life, and it's a very small country. And today there is wonderful pool of musicians.
Now, the festival celebrates the tradition of chamber music. What proportion of the classical canon is comprised of chamber music?
Quite a lot. When you think of the great composers, Mozart, Brahms, Schubert, Beethoven, they all have an enormous output of chamber music. And somehow it has maybe not been so in fashion. It's not so spectacular in a big hall, and that's why I think we're getting back to playing this music in small halls. And I think the festivals create a feeling of event, and a feeling that if you're not going to this concert, you miss out on something, and that's so important. You know, that's how the composers themselves used to organize these concerts. It wasn't part of a subscription season. It was simply Beethoven deciding, okay, now I want to present my 5th, 6th symphony, 4th piano concerto. Let me put together a program.
But with chamber music, they often would perform it in people's homes.
Absolutely.
It wasn't concert halls in the old days.
What we're missing today is, of course, people don't play so much anymore themselves. 100 years ago, a lot of people would play the piano at their homes. Today, we put on a CD. So to get back that feeling of the living room, that's important, I think.
Did you start playing at home? Was there music in your family?
Yeah, my parents have both played the piano, and so I started when I was 4 years old. It was quite natural.
My guest is Leif Uwe Andsnes, and he will begin a four-concert series at Carnegie Hall starting tomorrow. But there's also this new CD from EMI called on the Rachmaninoff Piano Concertos 3 and 4. Can you talk about this a bit?
Well,
You've did 1 and 2 already.
Yes, I have. I've just – when I was 17 or something, I thought if there's one thing I want to do in my life is to record – and to play all of Beethoven's concertos and Rachmaninoff's concertos.
Well, Rachmaninoff seems to be one of the more challenging of all of the composers for piano.
Sure.
Why?
I mean, he was arguably the greatest 20th century pianist. And for me, also one of the greatest composers. A lot of critics have labeled him as old-fashioned. He was writing so-called romantic music in a time when one was writing more atonal music. For me, that's very irrelevant today because I find that there was something very modern about him as a figure. He loved speed, you know, in the beginning of the 20th century, which was he loved fast boats, fast cars, and you feel it in the piano music. Actually, there's such a feeling of pace and movement and restless figures all the time. It's a very, very different romanticism from 50 years earlier.
So would he be approached differently by – well, you. This is your second recording of the number three.
Yes.
Has your thinking about it changed over the years?
My thinking and feeling has changed. And
it's 15 years ago you recorded
it. Yes, I did. And it was quite early to do that. Actually, it was the first piece by Rachmaninoff I studied, and it's his most difficult piece. It was a bit crazy thing to do and make my debut with. But it's a piece you have to live with. And when you live with a piece for a long time, it starts to breathe differently. You know, you feel the longer lines and you feel where it really needs contrast, where you can make moments of intimacy and where you really have to go for it. And the piece has all that. It's an enormous piece with so many interpretative possibilities.
Is there a sense that once you've recorded something, that's it? Glenn Gould, of course, went back and recorded the Goldberg Variations and other things that many years after he had done his first celebrated recordings of them, and they're very different. So when you're performing something that you originally performed or recorded 10, 15 years ago, do you think about how much you're thinking about it has changed?
I think most important thing for a musician is to feel like there is progress. There is never, because I love to play the same piece again and again, and this season I'm doing a lot, Brahms' Second Piano Concerto, for example. But I have to feel next week and when I'm playing it again that I've discovered something new.
So it has to be different each performance?
Somehow. There has to be a development. There has to be, I have to have a feeling that I've understood more, that I have, that new doors were opened. So even after I've recorded, of course, when I come back to a piece, I feel, oh, okay, I should have recorded now or maybe in 1 year or in 10 years. But I think that's very natural. That's how it has to be.
You also have a reputation for pushing the bar a bit. You collaborated with South African visual artist Robin Rhoda in performing Mussorgsky's pictures at an exhibition with 7 video screens. I guess you wanted to show the pictures on the at exhibition while you were performing?
Well, he made quite a different movie, very different from the original pictures that inspired Mussorgsky. Quite wild, quite avant-garde, using animation, using film. It was a very interesting project to do. It was
not
quite
distracting at all to have that stuff behind you? Or is that like a light show during a rock concert?
Yes, well, I concentrated very much on playing, and the film was actually directed with it was flexible so that they could adjust the speed to my performance, which was very important for me. Otherwise, I would feel like in a cage if I had to adjust to the film. So I felt very free in every concert, and I wasn't watching the screen, which was important. I thought we wanted to have a parallel situation where I played it as a normal concert and the movie was as equally strong. And it was a bit of a multitask challenge for the audience to take in both things. But I we found that it was easier for a younger audience than for an older one.
But then you've also helicoptered a piano to a mountaintop in Norway to perform the music of Edvard Grieg. You once played ankle deep in a harbor in Bergen, concluding your performance by having the piano drift into the water. Sounds like something The Who might have come up with. Is that the equivalent of smashing a guitar on stage?
Yes. Well, it ended up as being part of Robin Rhodes' movie, and that picture's reframed. But, I mean, this might be...
You're not going to do anything like this at Carnegie Hall, are you?
I don't think so.
Is there no axe to the piano?
We'll see about Fifth Avenue. Maybe we'll try something. But I think we have to, these days, get the music out to where people are. We cannot just rely on people getting into concert halls, because classical music doesn't have the same position as it's had. And especially to reach the younger audiences. So I love playing in old rock clubs and other places.
And you played at the Apple Store on Broadway in 67th Street last year for the free concert to attract young people?
To play in a different environment. I have myself often had the experience that when I get to hear wonderful music in a space, in a place where I didn't expect it to happen, I've had some of my most wonderful listening experiences. You know, just on the street, you suddenly hear I remember years ago in Vienna, I was walking in an evening and standing outside a house, and somebody had put on a Mozart symphony there, and I was standing and I had tears in my eyes, much better than in a concert hall.
You've said that you often develop obsessions with certain composers. Who are you obsessed with now?
It's often the composer that one is playing at the moment. But I have to say an obsession, and it will be an obsession for the next years, will be Beethoven. I am going to play a lot of Beethoven for the next 5 years. And I'm in the middle of my life. This is the most important music for me. Beethoven is always modern, radical, and very important.
Well, you also just recently become a father. There are some musical families. I don't know, this is going to draw you to Bach or some of the Baroque composers or Mozart, where it was a family affair.
Yes. Well, it's interesting you mentioned, because the one music that I've been listening a lot together with my daughter to is Bach's cantatas. So we have been listening the whole summer after she was born.
You can find details about the upcoming performances at Carnegie Hall and ticket details by going to our show page at WNYC.org. And my great thanks to Leif Ove Asnes, who will be performing 4 concerts at Carnegie beginning tomorrow, running through Saturday. He also has a new CD from EMI of the Rachmaninoff Piano Concertos 3 and 4. It's been a great pleasure talking with you.
It's a great pleasure being here.